Blog Talk Radio.
On October 30th, 1990, a young woman by the name of Cynthia Lorraine Ricketts Richardson was executed and dismembered by her husband, Donald Glenn Richardson. Her body parts were scattered over a 50-mile area in and around the Columbia River in the state of Oregon. As if the abuse Cindy suffered at the hands of her husband wasn't enough, the state of Oregon delivered its own brand of injustice to not only Cindy and her family, but to a second family as well. That is, when Donald was released from prison after only a 25-year sentence for his heinous crime against his wife. When Donald was released due to a new law that had been passed by the state legislature, he committed a crime so horrible it should have earned him the death penalty. Sadly, he will be released from prison in 2023. The family has fought for years to keep him in prison even before he was released the first time. This is Cindy's story. This is finally the justice she nor her family ever received at the hands of the criminal justice system in Oregon, from the attorney general down to the psychiatrist who stated that he was not a danger to others. While he was awaiting trial for Cindy's murder, his defense attorney stated in court that it was just a garden variety murder. Now Cindy can rest and her family can find the peace that has eluded them for so many years. Justice for Cindy by Yvonne Mason, available today on Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Gentlemen, this is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. Yes, that was a piece of shameless self-promotion. That is my latest book, Justice for Cindy, which is a true crime, and I wish that each of you would go and purchase that book because the criminal justice laws in the state of Oregon need to be revised. The family has not received justice, and neither did the second family that have been harmed by the criminal in this book. Tonight's show is one I've been waiting on for a minute. The young woman that I am speaking with is a businesswoman in her own right. Her name is Ellen O'Neill Little. I'm sorry, Ellen. I am going brain stupid tonight for some reason. It's been that kind of day.
I have five sisters, so you could have probably called me anything, and I would have answered.
She is a business coach, a writing coach. She's been open in businesses or 501c3s. She plays in bands. This woman is amazing. No. Some of the things she does is she is a strategist, a facilitator, a mentor, a motivator. She teaches, instructs, demonstrates. She provides value to every company that she's blessed to be a part of. She's also developed a series of books, strategies, and curricula, and partnered it with hands-on training and demonstrative teaching techniques, which lock in the knowledge. So you can start right away. Her business resolutions. Go ahead.
No, I just said, yeah, absolutely. Just grab the books and start whenever you want to start.
Go right, run with it. Her business resolutions is a consulting, training, and coaching service business where she provides practical hands-on solutions to everyday challenges in business, business strategy, coaching, business planning, and more. Now, that's not all she does, ladies and gentlemen. She also has Studio U, which conducts training events to help people how to learn how to open and effectively run their own business. including classes on technology, websites, and online presence. She teaches Microsoft products, including Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Publisher. And the Atlantic Real Estate Brokerage, which is a full-service real estate concierge company that employs the most effective and efficient agents and support staff. The ship is captained by the 2012 Brevard County Melbourne Association of Realtors, Realtor of the Year, Laurel Hazelett. In 2015, the agency was self-sufficient, and Ellen remained on as their marketing consultant and trainer. And the Rich Chick Investment Group, LLC. It is an investment club founded by three business partners, Ellen O'Neill Little, Diana Jabour, I hope I pronounced that right, MBA, and Laura Hazlett, broker. The club was created to teach a specific target group, women, yes, ladies, women, on how to invest, make wise choices, and research stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and money markets. There is an exception of monthly investment and attendance expectations. See, I can't even talk tonight. It's Friday night.
You're doing great.
She also has a talk about it. It's a presentation coaching company specializing in technology coaching, speech writing, and expert delivery. And that is not all, ladies. This woman is also the co-host of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and which is a weekly hour-long radio show on AM 1060 WMEL, Mondays from 1 to 2. And this has been going on since 2011 and is still going. She's also been the Vice President of Public Relations for District 84, which covers the north and the east coast of Florida, which has over 7,000 members and 200 clubs. This is the Toastmasters. She has served in some capacity as an officer of the division, district, and club level since 2010. She achieved her Distinguished Toastmaster Member Award, the highest achievement a member can have, through demonstrating speaking and leadership prowess within their parameters. She has been a keynote speaker at national conventions for nonprofit and publicly trading companies throughout the U.S. Welcome, my friend. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Wow, I'm exhausted you just saying all that.
But
like, who is this person? But
it's a very special lady named Ellen O'Neill Little, who teaches women how to be empowered.
That's right.
And before we get into that empowerment, let's tell these women about Miss Ellen O'Neill Little and how you got to where you are. I mean, this is a long laundry list of accomplishments for anybody, much less a woman. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but you know, women have sort of been second-class citizens for a long time.
Right. Well, see, I grew up in a family that my mother never let us believe that. And she was she actually went head-to-head with the owner of Weight Watchers in the early 1950s. She had opened a company called Diet Control. It was actually sued, and they were processing litigation against my mom from the Weight Watchers company. And this is when it was first in its inception. And my mom fought it and won. So she had always been that leader at 4'11". She had always been that leader and told us, because I have quite a few sisters and brothers, and always told us that we could do whatever we wanted and made us believe it. So whenever something happened, she would always have some witty comment about if we said something was hard, for instance, she would say, you know, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers had to do the same thing, but Ginger Rogers had to do it backwards and in heels. You're just going to have to figure it out. And she would give us that. She never told us what to do. She would give us analogies and tell us that we had to solve our own problems. So it made us really, from a society standpoint, it made us really strong because she taught us how to be problem solvers from a very young age. And one of the gifts that I don't think we really impart on on children anymore or growing up or families. You know, we're always at the easy answer. You know, let's just give somebody the answer. Let's just tell them what they need to do. And we became free thinkers at a really young age. Irish Catholic family, have three brothers and four sisters. I'm the youngest of eight children. Everybody was a nurse, a fireman, a police officer. Everybody went to school. Everybody went to college. And so it was sort of expected. And my mom and dad were, my dad was a fireman for 36 years. And my mom was an x-ray tech, worked at the hospital. And they figured it, they had date night every week and figured it out and made us all go to bed at 7:30 at night. Didn't matter how old we were, because after 7:30, it was their time. So they taught us like so many great principles. And so when all of these things happen, like the, you know, the feminist movements and all of these different things that were spoken about in the media about women, or about women not getting equal pay and all of those things, I never experienced that because my mom taught me how to deal with it. And so I was probably the exception, you know.
I want to back up just a little bit to something you said that resonates, and that is y'all, the expectation with young people is we'll just give them the answer. That doesn't teach them anything at all, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't teach you from a personality standpoint. The same problem can be solved so many different ways, and sometimes putting your personality into it makes the outcome the same but different, a different way of approaching it. And certainly doesn't give for free thinking and the ability to be able to work through things. Because if there's always just one answer to something, why spend the time or the energy of thinking through how it could be done better? Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Finish your thought, because this is important.
I go back to the Thomas Edison story, and I don't know if everybody, if all of your listeners know this story, so I'll make it really brief. But Thomas Edison got sent home with a note from his teacher at school, and it was in a sealed envelope, and he was supposed to give it to his mother, and only she was supposed to read it. So she read the letter, and he asked what the letter said, and she repeated the letter as if she was reading it and said, "Your son is brilliant and is far exceeding all of the other students in class, and he's not going to be done a service if he stays in school. You're better off teaching him at home." And he became one of the greatest thinkers and greatest inventors of all time. Later on in life, after his mother passed away, he found that letter. And the letter actually said that his brain was deficient and he was possibly retarded, that he should be tested. And unfortunately, he was going to have to be expelled from school because he wasn't keeping up with the other students. So there's this big secret that his mom kept. Just by changing those words, just by giving a different story or a different meaning to something that inevitably happened, he no longer went back to school. And she certainly could have told him the original story, but what would that have done? Giving people and giving children and even adults expectations and not to limit their free thinking and not to limit the way that they would like to perform things, it really delivers authenticity and it delivers such a magic to people's businesses that they never thought possible. Just like this radio show, Yvonne, I'm just so proud of you and the way that you've developed your books and developed this radio show around really giving people a voice. It's just amazing. Great. Good job. Good job.
Well, thank you. The premise of the show, and everyone that knows me knows how difficult it is for me to go to events because my husband's disabled, and my first priority is with him. But does that inhibit my being able to do what I love? And again, like you say, as a free thinker, because the show's been in the planning stages for 5 years, I just didn't know when it was going to happen, but I knew I wanted to do it. And it hit me one day, well, now's the time. Today is the perfect time because you can take and keep yourself out there, but you can also empower so many people.
Yeah. Yes. And that's, I think honestly, that's what our purpose is in life, and our purpose on this planet is to make a dent in the world somewhere. And you know, you can make a dent in somebody's life, and hopefully they're all good dents, that they're empowering and beneficial dents, that they can see the beautiful uniqueness and beautiful flaws in everything that we do, and be able to capitalize them on them, and just have just a wonderful life. And you know, I hate to quote the movie, but that's exactly the way I see things. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's pie in the sky, and maybe it's, you know, people think I'm a little too maybe optimistic, but, you know, with over 230 businesses that I've helped open in a matter of 5 years, and all of the teaching and all of the people that I've been able to come in contact with and see them flourish and see them grow in ways that they never thought possible, I can't be too far off with my thinking.
No, you can't. And what you have done, and I want to talk about some of that, is last night on the show that you listened to with Robbie Cox, I said the only time that knowledge becomes wisdom is when we give it away, because we know it. It's knowledge. We know it. And if we've got it, then we don't need to know it anymore, because we've already nailed it. So we have to be willing to give that knowledge away to someone else, which in turn becomes wisdom. And Robbie made a very valid point when he said, Yvonne, we're all sponges, and we all soak things up. And like a sponge, once it gets so full of stuff, of water or whatever, after a while, if it's not wrung out and filled up with new water, it becomes stinky. He says, so we have to squeeze that sponge out and give that knowledge away in order so that we can fill ourselves up with new knowledge. And I thought, you know, that's a great analogy. I'm stealing it from you. And he laughed and said, absolutely.
Yeah. And Robbie and I have become fast Facebook friends. So, I have you to thank for that. So,
well,
thank
he
you.
Is up in your area. He's on Satellite Beach. So
oh,
it
excellent.
Would be cool. Yeah, get Sita to get him on her show, because he is a wonder, and he's a marketing guru like you and I are. I mean, he knows what to do and how to do it. But women, and let's go back to the women thing, because I grew up, and like you, my mother taught me how to be a free thinker, much to my detriment sometimes, but still, I was an independent and free thinker. But it was at a time when women grew up, went to school, grew up, got married, had babies, and that was the end of that. If you had any dreams, they went on the back shelf. Well, not so much, because women have a lot, not that staying at home and being a stay-at-home mom is not a job within itself. You couldn't pay me enough anymore to do that. I did that already. It's very low paying, and it's gratifying.
Right.
But sometimes, if you don't kill them first. But the idea of, okay, what are you going to do when the children grow up and go away? Are you going to continue to raise grandchildren? I mean, is this what you want to do with the rest of your life? Or do you want to reclaim yourself? Because you're either always somebody's wife or somebody's mom or somebody's grandmom. When are you going to be just you? And you empower people to do that. You empower women to be Susie Q, not Susie Q, Janie's mom.
Correct. And that's, once again, going back to the beautiful wisdom that my mother shared with all of us. She never encouraged us to get married or have children. She encouraged us to be ourselves first. So she was my original branding coach of learning who I was and finding out who I wanted to be first, because she kept encouraging me and telling me that, you know, until you know who you are, you know, nothing is really going to, from a relationship standpoint, you're really going to have a tough time. So know who you are first, and make sure that your dreams and your wishes and your aspirations that you want to accomplish, those always come first, because the person that you decide to be with is going to appreciate that and appreciate that strength. And if they don't, they're not the right one. So we all made really great choices. Yeah, we all really made great choices. We haven't had two people in our family got divorced and they were extenuating circumstances, but the rest of all of us have been, I've been married for 30 years. My brothers have been married for 30 and 40 years. My sisters have been married for 30 years. So, you know, we just knew because we found partners that were supportive and found partners that were be able to bring out those qualities. So, you know, from an advice standpoint for women and for young girls that are, you know, possibly thinking about being entrepreneurs, it's not easy to do all of the dreams and the wishes that you want to do and then also bring somebody else into the mix if you're not prepared for all of that. So make wise choices. And, you know, life is a long journey, so you don't have to make split decisions on things. You know, take your time and identify what it is that you really want. And if a family and a growing family and is what you want to do, that's fantastic. That's just another dream. But how are you going to grow with them? So just
exactly.
For instance, my mom had me when she was 46 years old. She went back to college when I went to college. At 68 years old, she went back to college and joined a Mensa group when she was 67 or 68, something like that. So she never stopped growing or experiencing or learning or, you know, being involved in things. She never stopped any. We were taking windsurfing lessons when she was 70. So, you know, that's the kind of life that I want. I mean, when I look at someone like that, when you talk about role models, I mean, that's like the ultimate for me. Is I'd love to be going back to college. I feel like I'm in 92nd grade already. I don't think I've missed much school since I left college the first time. I've been taking classes here and there. Very few years have I not had some college credits.
So would it be a safe assumption to say that, number one, knowledge is power, and we should never, ever, ever stop learning, because when we stop learning, we stop growing.
Yes, and in that same statement, knowledge is power, but I also believe that getting knowledge from different sources is power. So
absolutely.
Not, you know, just going to school is not the only knowledge that gives you the power. It's the diversity that gives you the power. And in that same sentence, you know, even when we were, I was raised Catholic, but my mother never discouraged me if I wanted to go to any other church. So I went to Jehovah's Witness halls. I went to synagogues. I went to temples. I went to Presbyterian churches, Baptist churches, because they were all with my friends. And I, at a very young age, I could distinguish the difference between the New Testament, the Old Testament, the teachings, the beliefs, the culture of all of those different religions. And it gave me such a background from a knowledge standpoint later in life that I was able to, I thought I was Puerto Rican until I was six, actually. So, you know, it's like one of those things that you just like adopt other cultures,
uh-huh.
And you just adopt other things when you're in the middle of it. So the knowledge is power statement is so true, but make sure it's a diverse basis of knowledge. Don't think that there's only one way. You could get knowledge from so many different channels.
And it would be a safe statement to also say that be willing to be open-minded to another one's opinion, because opinions are not right or wrong. They're opinions. That's why it's called an opinion. It is a belief or a thought process that one person has, and it is theirs to own. But be willing to at least listen if it differs from yours, because who knows what you may learn.
Absolutely. And I didn't lose, just in that same vein, I didn't lose one friend over all of these politics. And I was very vocal about what I thought, because I was open-minded about what other people said. And when they, maybe not criticized, because I don't really think I got attacked and criticized like other people did, because my thoughts and my opinions were of that same vein, of that same, look, this is the way I feel about it, and this is why I feel about it. Just because this is my background, or this is why I saw it this way. And I didn't get attacked. I wasn't called names or any of those things.
Because you used logic and reasoning in presenting your case, and that takes us full circle back to the things that you have done in your life, the knowledge that you have gleaned from going to school, from reading different cultures, from studying with an open mind, from different religions to politics to
right.
brokerage houses. You were a sponge and you were willing to soak this up, and that has made you not only successful in the business world as a business person, forget the female part for the moment, but as a business person, but it has also made you well-rounded in a cynical world that I would garner to say half of the population is closed-minded.
And I go back to that same thing because I really don't think that we've taught that free thinking, that ability to be able to problem solve, the art of conflict management. You know, I don't think anybody is really sticking to those principles either as they're raising children or even in school. You know, if we got in a fight in school, if we got an argument in the classroom, I was around people that, and I don't know why I was. It wasn't like I was blessed with going to some. I went to an inner city school right up until fifth grade. I was one of 11 white kids that were at my school. There was gang violence. There was teacher riot. You know, there were teacher picket lines that we had to cross every year. I mean, I was exposed to a lot at a very young age, and I never. I can honestly say that there was conflict for sure. But I was always able to get out of it with wit and communication and being able to, you know, talk my way out of something and the art of figuring out 16 different ways to get home.
There you go.
You know, I wasn't that fast. Yeah, I wasn't a fast runner, so I had to be really strategic in the way that I went home.
I love
sometimes.
It.
Yeah.
That's
the wit. Yeah, but that's the wit and the... you know, the free thinking. Well, if I'm going to be faced with a problem, give me, you know, three options. And I would always think of, I don't know where it came from. I always got the three options in my head of what I would do if I was faced with whatever it happened to be. So, you know, and it's the same thing. I teach my nieces and nephews and you know, even the ones, you know, even my nieces and nephews when they're struggling, because it was a different time when they grew up. You know, when they were in college and after they got out of college and, you know, they're finding themselves broke all the time. I'm like, you know something? I learned the best lessons in the days that I had to roll dimes for gas money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just – here's the deal. You may be broke a couple of times in your life, but the more times you find yourself where you're a little struggling for money, you just get faster at getting out of it.
Exactly.
You know, if you really think about it, you just learn how to solve the problem quicker because now you have a little more experience under your belt. And I tell
and
people that in business as well, that it's, you know, there's highs and lows. Being an entrepreneur is like jumping out of a plane and figuring it out on the way down.
Tell me about it.
There's going to be highs. Yeah, there's going to be highs and lows. And eventually you learn you know, the first time you jump it, you may pull the parachute at 2,000 feet and you figure it out. But the next times you jump out of the plane, it might be 5,000 feet and 10,000 feet. And then all of a sudden, it's a great experience rather than always that pit in your stomach. But the pit in the stomach, you just have to put a different meaning to. You know, like I tell people all the time, the pit in your stomach, if you just change the meaning to something great is about to happen, I'm just going to have to go through a little bit of pain. But something great is going to come on the outside of it.
And don't say, well, something bad's going to happen, because that becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. And it's hard to train yourself, but it's amazing what you can do when you empower yourself like that. Every time you get a bad feeling or you have, just remember, it's the story you're telling yourself about the feeling that's making that happen. You know, Tony Robbins has always been a great, you know, kind of one of those people that I check in with every so often. He's always got great books and great things. But one of the things that I learned from, I'm pretty sure it was like
one of his early books, was that he said, and are we allowed to swear on your show? Is this like an open?
Of course,
like
we
not
are.
Bad swear. Okay. So yeah, he used to say in order for you, the only thing stopping you is what he said. The only thing stopping you from doing anything is the bullshit story you tell yourself or why you can't do it.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not a morning person. I'm not a this person or I'm not a that person. Well, be that person then. Get your head out of your ass and be that person.
And one of my favorite sayings is fake it until you make it. So you don't feel good today about yourself. Well, pretend, because pretty soon the pretend becomes real.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Or figure out why
it is that you feel bad.
Right. Did you get up on the wrong side of the bed, then go back to bed and roll over on the other side and get up again?
Another great Buddhist phrase that I learned from one of my friends who's a devout Buddhist, he used to say, Ellen, if you don't like, you know, all of this time and space and everything that we're going through, it's all a dream. You don't like the dream, wake up.
That
is profound. Yeah, that's profound. Just wake up. And, you know, that can mean so many things. Like, wake up, get your head out of your butt and wake up.
Exactly. Don't sit there and moan and groan because you can't. It amazes me when I hear people say, well, I want to do this, but, and I'm saying, and therein lies the problem. You put a but there because that tells me that you really, really, really are not heart and soul into whatever it is that you think that you want to do. It's a passing phase. And take, for instance, I know you've been following one of my granddaughters, the one that is going into the service. Now, this child is 17 years old. She's been talking to recruiters since she was 10 years old. She got into the
my
ROTC.
My kind of girl.
She got into ROTC because it was the next step. She failed her ASVAB, but she's going to go take it again because now she knows what she needs to study. And she's not going to let anything or anybody stop this dream. She's not putting a butt behind that dream.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
She has made herself empowered, and she's only 17. So these women out there that say, well, I want to do this, but they're not empowering themselves, are they?
Well, it could come down to two things. Either they're really poor time managers and they don't see a vision that they can work anything in that they want to make happen, or they just truly don't have the vision or the passion that they say they do. And I used to say all the time with employees, one of the things that you didn't say about my background, I spent 20 years with Home Depot. I was a store manager at 25, managing 300 employees, 11 assistant managers. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. But I made it through because I had people skills.
Uh-huh.
And I used to say all the time when the employees or the managers would come to me and they'd say, you're giving me unrealistic expectations. And I'd say, yeah, but every time you come to me, you do all this well said stuff. So how about some more well done stuff? Like,
exactly.
Don't tell me what you're going to do. Tell me what you've done. Yeah, or just do it. So a lot of times people will say, they'll be dreaming or they'll be saying, you know, I wish I could, but, or I wish I... All it is that they haven't really seen the vision through of what they want to do. And when people call me and ask me to be their coach or to work them through a business plan of whatever that happens to be, those are the things that we remove first. I ask them, tell me the 15 reasons why this is not going to work. And if they come up with 15 right away, I usually don't start working with them until they're ready. Because they're not ready.
They're not mentally, emotionally, or spiritually ready.
Right. Right.
Because
I'm doing us both a favor.
yeah, because they've got to have a balance. You've got to be physically ready. You've got to be mentally ready. You've got to be spiritually ready. And you've got to be emotionally ready. Because all of those four things play into the vision.
Absolutely. And the physical part has a lot to do with time management of how you spend your time. If, you know, for instance, if physical fitness is important to you,
and you don't make any time to work out, your actions don't match your words. So
exactly.
You're really not physically ready to do what that particular thing is. If you, you know, say you want to eat healthy and you want to eat clean, and all of a sudden it starts, you start getting lazy about it. It's because it's not a priority. It no longer made the priority list for you. And you just have to own that. Nobody's judging you for it. You just got to own it, because what happens then is that those excuses start playing into every other part of your life. And that's what causes a lot of the depression. And that's what causes a lot of the waking up on the wrong side of the bed consistently. You know, those kinds of things where, you know, and I'm not talking about clinical depression, because, you know, that's a whole nother thing, but just the,
right.
You know, just not feeling good and not motivated and not, you know, wanting to do things. And really there's nothing medically wrong, you know, that everything is still working the way it's supposed to be working. It's always going to be a challenge. By the way, it's a challenge for everybody. You know, it's a challenge for you to be able to get all of these great guests that you've gotten. It's a challenge probably some days to wake up and write. But when you're a writer, that's the only thing you should want to do.
Exactly.
Is wake up and write. That's your passion. That's your love. So I think it was in that Whoopi Goldberg movie, like Sister Act or something like that. Most profound line in one of the two of them, I forget it was one or two, but she says to the young girl, if you want to be a writer, then every day you should wake up and write. If you want to be a singer, every day you should wake up and sing. You know, I want to be a rock star. So every day I wake up and I play my guitar, and I found bands and I found places that allow me to play my music. And am I ever going to be popular and have my own CD? I don't know. I don't know if that's the direction that I want to go. Right now I feel good about going and playing at assisted living facilities and at, you know, teaching kids and showing them that you can be brave and have courage and do whatever it is that you want to do, even when you might not be great at something. You know, just being able to go out there and share your gift with people. Your gift is your gift. So whether it's in business or whether it's in the arts, and whether it's like you being an amazing author and sharing your stories and your background, and Robbie Cox, the same thing, sharing his gift of marketing and the books that he's written. It goes back to what you said originally. It's the sharing. That's what makes it magical for everybody.
So we've got about 20 minutes left. If a young woman comes to you, and I want this generation of young women especially, because you and I both have talked about this, these kids are our future, and if they don't have a solid foundation, I feel sorry for our future, because we won't have a future. So
right.
if a young woman comes to you and she says, Ellen, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know anything, but I want to be empowered. What would be some of the things that you would say to her? Because most young people don't know who they are. They haven't found that identity yet. How would you give her a roadmap to help her on her journey?
Anytime someone 18, you know, around that, let's just say under 21 comes to me, either with a business idea or much like what you're saying, I just don't have a direction of where I'm going. The first thing I make them do is to do a time study. Tell me what a typical couple of days for you is, of how you spend your time. And it's funny that you say this, because I recently had a similar situation. And it was somebody that was feeling bad about themselves and really didn't know that they would have the confidence to go to college and, you know, a couple of other issues like that. And what I found out was that she was spending like 4 or 5 hours a week watching reality TV. And that was the first thing I told her to cut out. And yeah, what's your favorite shows? What's your favorite kind of music? And
kind of directed her in a way of, you have to, first of all, you have to surround yourself with other people that are wanting to just have a vision or go in some direction or have goals. That's the first thing. Because especially when you're young and impressionable, your friends still matter. You know, even up to the age of 21, probably even up to the age of 26 at this point, because it seems like younger people are a little less mature, if you will. You know, it seems like they get a little older. The 26 is about the age that I'm starting to see a little bit more maturity now. And I don't mean that, again, and I don't mean that in any disrespect. It's just, there's just not a great foundation out there. It's not a community raising our families anymore. You know, individual moms and dads really just trying to struggle and make it through. So, and the TV was everybody's everybody's babysitter. Well, it was okay when we were watching it, and it was Bewitched and and some of those other, F Troop, and some of those other shows. It was probably okay, or a little okay, or a little more okay then. But now, like Bridezillas and 16 and Pregnant, those are all reality TV shows that are exposing our young people to that, this is what's okay and this is what's become okay. So the first thing, going back to kind of a system, the first thing would be really to get a time. Who are you hanging out with? What are you doing with your time? Who are you spending your time with? And what kind of hobbies do you have? Because once again, that kind of gives me an indication of, society, that they've put themselves in a society that's never going to let them grow. It's as if you were a drug addict, right? If you continue to hang out with other drug addicts, you're eventually not going to be able to get out of that. Yeah, you're not going to be able to get out of that, it's going to be really difficult for you to get out of that society. So put yourself in a society or surround yourself with the good things, and that means going to school. That means getting good grades. That means could be going to church for some people. It could be getting involved in music or philanthropy or volunteering or, any of those things that give you life skills to be able to deal with people, to be able to have conversations with people, to be able to make people feel good, because in turn that makes you feel good. So it's about that confidence boost. And I can tell you that volunteering has been like my number one success rate with folks. With especially with young adults, because it gives them the experience that they wouldn't normally have. So when they go to find a job and they say, what's your job experience? Volunteering speaks a lot on a resume.
It does. It really does.
And also,
it teaches them dependability, responsibility, ownership.
Exactly. Right, because they're there because they want to be and not because they're there because they're getting a paycheck.
Right.
And they're there because somebody's relying on them to do that. Same thing, Habitat for Humanity was a great thing to get my nephews involved with. It not only taught them a trade, but, man, they are great husbands now because they're handy around the house, and can do those kinds of things. So, and many other reasons, but I mean, it's just one example. So that's the first thing, is really to look at their time and where they're spending their time. And then the second part is to really kind of derive out what makes them happy. So tell me about the last time that you were happy, like so elated that you almost burst into tears. You were just so happy. And a lot of it sometimes has to do with a sport that they got some kind of recognition, or they won a state championship, or that team activity, that team type of a group. So that's where I direct them, again, from a work ethic or from a workspace type of thing. You want to go be around people. If that's what made you so happy, you want to make sure that any place that you're going to go to start your career is going to be in a team environment. And that could be at a restaurant. You could be a server. You could be, you could work at retail. You could, there's a whole lot of places to do that. If the most inspiring thing that happened to them was something that happened in church and it was really introspective and a personal moment that really they weren't sharing necessarily with a group of people, those are times that you look at the creative and what do you do, what makes you that creative soul? going into those personal moments a little bit more. So identifying whether they're more introspective or gregarious, or, you know, maybe that's not the word, but outgoing, right? And what's the two things? Yeah, extrovert and introvert, right? So really kind of identifying those things, because, you know, an introvert is never going to be happy being out in the public eye and being around a ton of people. And an extrovert is never going to be happy in an office with, you know, in a cubicle, right? So, you know, kind of identifying those things, because then you can start guiding them in the direction, at least in a direction, that they might want to go. And I did a lot of Myers-Briggs when I worked for Home Depot all those years. One of the things that kind of helped me early on was that I mastered the Myers-Briggs and the DISC. I don't know if you know the DISC personality survey, the driver, the introspective, the steady, and the careful, I think is what the C was. But I mastered those to identify people's behaviors. They didn't necessarily have to take the test. I could kind of pick it out based on what those criteria were, you know, how they dressed. If I had somebody that was coming in that worked in the lumber department and they were always, you know, they were just shy of wearing a three-piece suit, you know, I could tell what type of personality they were, you know, always the pressed jeans and, you know, perfectly ironed shirt. And then we had the other guys that would come in and, you know, they look like they pulled the shirt out of a hamper. Not that either was bad, but it's just who they were. And you could kind of tell from a personality standpoint, what direction they were going to go in. Were they going to be leaders, or were they going to be followers, or were they going to be taskmasters, or whether they were going to be people persons? So, and it helped me identify talent in the store. So, when you asked me that question about a young person, that's where I really feel like I got a lot of that, that strength of being able to identify those things was in that environment, because I was hiring 18-year-olds right out of high school and didn't really know what they wanted to do. Some of them didn't want to go to college, and they would come back and talk to me, and I think they thought I was like 40 years old, but I was only 25. I wasn't much older than they were, but because I had the authority in that position and because I kind of looked a little bit like them, I think they felt closer to me than they did some of the other managers. And, you know, that was a big thing, too.
You could relate to them.
You know?
Yeah, because you weren't that far removed from their age, so you could relate to where they were coming from. And when I was managing C-stores, I hired college-age kids because I had the biggest store in the company. It was right at the college. It was at the University of Georgia. And some of these kids had never worked before in their life. Never.
Right.
And
right.
They would come in, and I would say, well, what do you think you're worth? And they would say, oh, whatever minimum wage is. And I'm going, wait, stop. If I were any other manager, I might say, okay, fine, I'll give you $7.50 an hour or whatever it was, $6 an hour. I said, but let's talk about this for a minute. What can you bring to the table to warrant my hiring you? Are you dependable? Are you reliable? Are you clean? Are you honest? And we go through this whole litany of just everyday, normal things. And they would say, yes, yes, yes. And I'd say, okay, you're already bringing to the table more than what most people think they have. And it was like the light bulb went off. And it empowered them to believe in who they were at that point in time.
But unfortunately, so many of them run into the person that just says, okay, minimum wage it is, and doesn't, and we don't take the time to really get to know each other anymore. Even in a work environment, even managers now, they don't really take the time in learning who their talent is and what they could bring to the table. And that just extinguishes their creative ability, where you have, you know, somebody that's been a cashier for 25 years and just doesn't, you know, and then you find out 10 years into their career that they've run a household and they have 5 kids, and, you know, why didn't you tell me this before? Well, I didn't think it mattered. Are you kidding me? How many people do you think can manage
5 kids and get to work on time and balance a budget on what you're getting paid. There's all kinds of skills.
That your brain and it's sad that, and we're back to the women thing, and I think it's because I see so many women that have been beat down first by maybe home life and then by life in general. They forget that they have these beautiful skills to bring to any table, but all they have to do is let them out there. Say, look, I have 5 children. I raised 5 children by myself. I put 5 children through college by myself, and I did it this way. So, yeah, what I'm bringing to your company, I could do a management job.
Exactly. And be really good at it. Really
yeah.
good. And people will say to me all the time that, and I'm not a good cook, so I'm not a good example of this, but people will say to me all the time, oh, I have, you know, I feed 8 people in my family or 5 people in my family. And they say, but I'm terrible at math. And I say, well, you have to obviously do something with a recipe.
Exactly.
In order to take something that's a, you know, a meal for 2 and make it into a meal for 8. So, oh, well, that's easy. You know, how to change cups into gallons and how to well, that's math, darling.
but see, it doesn't,
you know,
resonate.
And it's the same thing with guys, too. It's the same thing with guys, too. You know, metrics that
yep.
you know, well, you have metric screwdrivers. How do you translate that into inches? And how do you read a measuring tape? You know, a 16th, a 32nd. So how many 30 seconds make a quarter? You know, you've known that your whole life off of a measuring tape.
But it doesn't resonate that it is a skill set from a life lesson.
Right, exactly right. And that's what it all boils. Honestly, I don't think we give enough credit to what we do on a day-to-day basis in that development. And in the same breath, I don't think we give our young people and our families enough time to develop that part of it. And like I said before, you know, everybody's going to have money troubles at some point in their life, or they're going to have balance budget issues or those types of things. You know, the trick is just like when you're drowning, the trick is not to struggle, not to panic. You know, don't panic. The trick is to deduct, you know, from a reasoning standpoint, how am I going to get myself out of it? You know, and praying helps. I mean, praying, giving yourself the faith and giving yourself that moment to reflect and pray to whoever it is that you pray to and say, I'd like to not be here anymore. I'd like to not have this feeling anymore. So once I get through this, teach me how not to be here again, you know, and just
and
have faith in yourself.
Teach me how to change the dream.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. That's really what it boils down to.
Yeah, and it boils down to, okay, I have to keep moving forward, because if I stand still and stay in one spot, I become stagnant.
Right. Exactly right. And I try and tell, you know, and you and I have been around people that have been abused. You've experienced abuse of some type, shape, or form. I mean, all of us have on some level. Mine was on this, you know, mine was that walk home from school for the first 10 years of my life, where, you know, my home was really safe, but man, outside those walls, it was like a, you know, it was something to be reckoned with. So, learning that doesn't define you too, and using that as a, well, this is the way I feel, and it's because I went through this. Okay, and everybody goes through something.
Right.
So don't let it define you. And if you need extra help, get the extra help that you need in order to get through that. But don't let it hold you back. It held you back for so many years. Don't let it be your prison. You know,
just let it be a defining moment in your life. Don't let it define who you've become, because it doesn't own you. You own it.
Right. And you certainly don't want to go back there. So, you know, let it be your lesson that you know now. You know better skills in identifying those behaviors in somebody that you know you don't want to be around anymore. You know, I try not to be around controlling people anymore because that's my memory, is controlling people that are, you know, right on you and have to control every single thing that you do. I don't mix well with those people. So
I
stay away
either.
From them. They're not in my circle. Yeah, they're not
no.
in my circle.
I
doesn't make them bad
with,
people. I
just don't want to be around them.
Right.
I'm
also not good around people that aren't direct.
Me either.
So those folks aren't in my circle either. Again, it doesn't make them bad people, but I want people to tell me the truth. You know, I don't want people to talk behind my back, or I want people that are going to be going back to that authentic word, where I want people to be real. You know, you don't have to. You can certainly soften the blow a little bit if you'd like to, if you think you need to, but please tell me the truth, you know, so that we can move forward, because that's the only way I can fix it.
And don't be afraid to tell the truth, because the truth is easier to deal with than dancing around the issue. And if I ask someone a direct question, I want a direct answer. Or if someone asks me, well, what do you think? Expect me to tell you what I think, because you've asked me, what do you think? Don't say, well, what do you think, and then get pissed off at me because I gave you an answer.
Right.
And it wasn't what you
exactly
wanted.
Right. Right. And I don't want to have to start with the answer to your question with, are you ready?
Exactly.
Are you ready for this?
You're
you know.
Like
you're probably not going to like what I'm about to say.
But you asked.
Right. And hopefully the reason why people ask, and I truly believe this, I hope the reason why people ask is because, you know, you are so well respected and so well loved, and people really do value your opinion, much like anybody else who gets the honor of being to answer or give advice on any particular issue that comes up, because that person really feels like you're the one that can really shed light on whatever that is. And that's an honor. And when you kind of squander that honor away by not answering truthfully or giving them the reality of it, you're really not doing either one of you a service.
You're cheating yourself, and you're cheating that person. Number one, you're not true to yourself. And number two, you're not helping that person to grow. And granted, it might not be the answer they want, but it's the answer.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly
We've
right.
We've got about a minute and a half, so real quick, because you're coming back, my dear. This is not your final rodeo here.
Okay.
I would love to have you as a permanent guest on the show, as a regular, because you've got so much wisdom to depart, and we hadn't even scratched the surface yet of how to get from point A to point B. So
Well, my parting words to all of this is that everybody who's listening to your show right now, if you ever had a doubt in your mind, you can do whatever it is that you want to do, but you have to really choose the people that you surround yourself well. You know, surround yourself with great people that are going to give you the truth, be honest, and help you grow and help you move in the direction that you want to go to. And sometimes that means changing your friends. Sometimes that means changing your environment a little bit. And those things are tough, but not undoable. So, and you certainly all have a great friend in Yvonne to reach out to.
Thank you, my darling. And thank you for spending an hour of your time with me. It is an honor and a privilege, and I appreciate it.
I've loved it.
I don't know where the hour went. It just flew away. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, at 8 o'clock, Miranda Shaklin, she is a brand new author. She will be on my show. Next Wednesday night, author David Morrell, who wrote the Rambo series. Ellen, you got to listen in. That was a coup on my part. Thursday night, my friend Floyd Potts and I teach y'all how to discourse without being angry at each other and with staying friends. And how to stay friends when you have discourse and debates with each other. It's a beautiful thing. And as I say at the end of every show, we only get one time around on this earth. So you like yourself, you love yourself, you accept yourself. You live your dream. At the end of your days, when you're laying there and people say, have you got any regrets, be able to say, no, I don't. I've done everything I wanted to do. I've lived the life the way I wanted to. And then when you're gone and you have the birth date and you have this little dash and you have the death date, that little dash should mean that you made a difference. So until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, this is Off the Chain, and I am your host, Yvonne Mason. Ellen, hang on just a minute after the show dies, and we'll talk for a minute. Join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. We are now off the air, but I thank you so very much, my dear. And what I will do...
That was so much fun. I could talk to you forever.
Fun. I can't wait to bring you back. It was a hoot and a half, I'm going to tell you. And we made a difference. But what I'm going to do when the show goes into archives, once I get through fighting with my laptop had a brain fart and took on its own life form, I will upload it to all the podcasts, and then I will put the podcast up on my page and tag you in it, and take it and run with it. Repost it. And
yeah, I will do. Yeah,
yourself.
Absolutely.
All right, my darling.
Well, I'll repost it for you as well, and you get more guests, get more wonderful people on the show.
Anybody
so thank
that,
you also. Thank you so much.
Well, and anybody that you know that wants to appear, you know, tell them to contact me because I'm always looking for guests. Whether they're an artist, whether they're in business, whether they're a mindset guru, meditation, it don't matter. If they got a platform or passion. Thank you, my dear, again. And I will set you up for after the first of the year and we'll do this again.
I can't wait. I can't wait. Merry whatever you celebrate.
Merry to whatever you celebrate. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
There you go. Merry Christmas. Yeah. Amen, sister. See you soon.
All right,
darling.
I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.